Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a new bipartisan bill in the state legislature would end the use of personal conviction waivers by parents who want to opt out of vaccinating their children. We'll talk to one of the sponsors of the legislation. First, there are a lot of different crafts that people practice. Some go back hundreds or even thousands of years. You might think of woodworking or pottery, but what about spinning yarn, glassblowing, making chocolates, or making custom-built motorcycles? Eric Gorges is the host of the PBS show A Craftsman's Legacy. In each episode, Eric visits a different craftsperson. He doesn't just talk with them, he works alongside them. And he doesn't just learn some new skills, he picks up some life lessons along the way. Eric is the author of the new book, A Craftsman's Legacy, Why Working With Our Hands Gives Us Meaning. It just came out today. He'll be at Milwaukee Makerspace for an event tomorrow evening hosted by Boswell Books. Eric, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, Eric, you write that you grew up exposed to and with an appreciation for working with your hands. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and you know, my dad was super mechanical, and my granddad was a cabinet maker, and we never hired anybody to do anything, honestly. I mean, we did everything ourselves, and I thought it was just normal. I really did. It wasn't until I was older that I realized not everybody sort of grows up this way or is able to do all those things or wants to, you know. But as an adult, looking back on it, that's when I really realized, like, wow, look at that upbringing, you know, and what it gave me, the work ethic and the ability to work with my hands and not be, you know, deterred by difficult projects, and also appreciate other craftsmen, you know, and other people that work with their hands for a living.
That said, you weren't doing this for a living for a while, and you ended up doing it in part literally as a form of therapy. Can you talk about how you ended up there?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I originally was in IT. I worked for Xerox Corporation, and it was a great environment, and I truly loved it. But I started to develop a pretty severe panic disorder to the point where it ultimately made me agoraphobic, and I didn't leave my house and was pretty heavily medicated for a long periods of time, and working with my hands gave me relief because it allowed my mind to focus on something other than when is my next attack going to happen. And you know, I was having 6 to 8 attacks a day, and it was truly debilitating for me personally. But working with my hands allowed an escape for me and for my mind, and I could lose sense of time in it. And it really was, you know, something that healed me in more ways than one. And it changed who I am as a man. You know, as horrific and horrible as that experience was for me to go through, it was probably the best thing that ever happened in my life, besides my daughter, you know?
And going through the book and on your show, of course, you take a lot of lessons away from what we get out of working with our hands, out of making a craft. And one that really struck me was you talk about as a kid making model airplanes and, you know, you want that glue to be dry now so you can go to the next step. Or making a motorcycle, you want the pieces to look like a gas tank now, but as much as we want things to happen now, you are on the craft schedule. It doesn't care what you want. And that seems like a really valuable thing sometimes.
Oh, right. Think about today. You know, today's world, you can buy anything online. You can have it at your doorstep sometimes the same day. You know, we've lost touch with the idea of patience, the idea of waiting for things, the idea of allowing somebody to think through a project and make something special. I'm you know, first in line to blame on that too. You know, I'm all over Amazon all the time, you know what I mean? And I'm like, hey, when's my box going to be here? And I'm tracking shipments, you know, but at the same time, I strive in my life to not be rushed, not allow things to rush me, to enjoy the process, to enjoy the experience today, right now, And that means a lot to me. I feel like I get a lot out of that.
Talking to Eric Gorgias. He's the host of the PBS show, A Craftsman's Legacy. He's got a new book out today. It's called A Craftsman's Legacy, Why Working With Our Hands Gives Us Meaning. Well, Eric, I think there's probably two groups of people out there listening right now. Some people say, of course, I work with my hands. I've done it my whole life. I love it. Yeah. And then there's people, and this is more me, like, okay, I'm probably never going to earn a living working with my hands. I wouldn't know where to start. Talk to this second group, my group. Even if we're not going to make a career out of motorcycles or pottery or whatever, make the case that we should find something to at least spend a little time doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and that's really the deal. Like, not everybody's going to make a living or wants to make a living doing this. And you shouldn't have to or really want to. I mean, this is your life, right? But everybody can relate to a time in their childhood when, pardon me, when they made a Christmas ornament or a Mother's Day card or a Father's Day card, right? And you're in school making this and you're 8 years old, say, or whatever, and you are putting everything you have into this, everything. You're using all the glitters. You're using all the pasta and noodles and the glue and everything else. You are so excited to make this and to gift it. Right? There's no chance you're waiting until Christmas or Mother's Day or Father's Day to gift this to that person. You're doing it right when it's done, right when you get home, because you're so excited and so proud of that, right? That's what I want you to find again, because it's still in you. As adults, it just gets beaten down over time because all these other priorities in life come about, right? You got your family, you got bills to pay, you got, you know, all these other commitments that you have to keep up. And we lose track with that sense that we once had as a kid, but it's still there. That's why you should work with your hands. That's why you should think about doing something. And it doesn't matter what it is. Make models. Make a carving out of wood. Do some knitting, some yarn work, whatever, clay work, whatever. There are so many different things you can do that have minimal, if any, cost involved to it. And really, you can learn as you go. You don't need to be an expert day one. Nobody is.
That's one of your big lessons in the book. You say, yeah, the first things you do are going to be, I don't know the word you use, but terrible, let's say. So what?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Yeah. What if you fail? Who cares? You've learned from it, right? The difference between an expert and a novice, an expert's made more mistakes than you have. But once you start making those mistakes, you're on your way to becoming an expert, right? That's the difference. You have more time, more seat time, as I say. You know, you've spent more time doing it. You've made more mistakes. You know how to recognize them and how to correct them, and you move forward. And that's so important. You know, I truly believe that we learn from our mistakes, not from our, you know, our champion moments, not from our successes necessarily, because it really doesn't reinforce anything. But mistakes, you gather from that.
In your book, you and in your show, of course, you meet lots of people who have a lot of inspiring stories and work that they do. I want to check out one of them now. Somebody who's an amazing craftsman in the field of pottery, David McDonald. You often ask people whether they think of themselves as artists or as craftspeople. I want to give a listen to a little of David McDonald's answer to that.
I inherited an artistic tradition that goes back centuries from Africa. An artist is concerned with creating a new tradition, whereas a craftsman tend to be more respectful of tradition, and then through that vehicle, try to make a personal statement.
You've gotten a lot of different answers to that question of artist or craftsperson, but I love this one that David feels like he is part of this lineage of people doing pottery going back literally centuries. Can you talk about what you got from David?
You know, working with David was a very unique and special time for me. My mother had just passed, and about 2 days after her funeral, I was with David in his workshop. And so my mind wasn't really in the proper space to be hosting a television show. And I was rather lost, to tell you the truth, because my mind was on my mother at the time. And once we got sitting behind the wheel, the pottery wheels, and I had never done it before. I didn't know what I was doing. I was having trouble with it, you know, and I didn't know how much pressure to apply and where to apply pressure. And oftentimes when I'm watching somebody else work, I focus on their hands because I can read a lot from their hands, how they're positioning them and how much pressure they're applying and things like that. Well, with ceramics, your hands are coated with slits, so you can't necessarily see them very well. And I was struggling with it, and David came over to me, and he put his hands on my hands, and it was such a powerful time because I instantly knew how much pressure to apply, and I instantly knew where I should hold my hands and how I should do it. And man, it just lit from there. It became another opportunity for me to heal from, you know, and I'm a Catholic boy, you know, I go to church every Sunday, and God had me where he wanted me at that time. And David stepping into my life at that time was so healing for me because I got to tell you, man, I made probably 7 or 8 bowls at that time because it just, again, allowed me to refocus my mind and think about something other than my mom at that time and get back into doing what I was there to do, which is to highlight David and his craftsmanship and his abilities and just a wonderful man he is. And even when we were done, you know, when my segments were done filming, the crew picked up the wheel, they moved it off to the side out of frame and let me go. And I just kept making bowls and kept working at it, you know, and David was just like, yeah, man, go at it, keep doing it. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity, you know, and grateful for his friendship.
We're talking to Eric Gorgas right now. He's the host of A Craftsman's Legacy on PBS. His new book is A Craftsman's Legacy, Why Working with Our Hands Gives Us Meaning. We'll go to a caller now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about Marcus?
First, I just like to say, Eric, I really enjoyed the program where you were working on the watches. I found or the clocks. I found that one exceedingly interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, love the program. Personally, I do sculpture, I do art, and I like to take more of like the Bob Ross approach from PBS programming. No mistakes, just happy accidents.
Exactly, and, yeah.
You know, and just I've actually had stuff where it turned out better because of the mistake or the accident. And like you said before, God has his way of doing things and makes things happen in his own time. And so, yeah, I just I like to create art that, you know, sculpture that I enjoy looking at for the most part. And if other people like it, then all the better.
Marcus.
That's awesome, man.
Thanks so much. And Eric, you write about there are a lot of craft and art traditions that require at least one flaw, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, perfection is this illusion that we chase, right, in our own mind. And you know, that inclusion of an error or some form of imperfection, you know, that goes back thousands of years, you know, and it's still followed today. No one's perfect except for God.
Marcus,
and,
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. Eric, before we go back to the callers, I wanted to ask, you know, you knew you wanted to work with your hands. Why was it motorcycles in particular?
That's a great question. So at the time, a friend of mine asked me while I was sick, he said, you know, if you could do anything for a living, what would you do? And I instantly said, you know, I'd make things. I love making. I love creating. And he said, what would you create? And I really went back and forth between metal and wood. You know, I had a background in wood already. I'd done some woodworking, and I enjoyed it very much. But metal, I didn't know anything about, but I was intrigued by it. I always thought welding was just super cool, you know, and the ability to weld and fuse material together. And being able to shape metal seemed very interesting to me and challenging. And that's how it went down.
Let's bring on another caller now. Bridget is with us in Seymour. Bridget, hi.
Hello. My mother, I want to talk about her because she was an accomplished artist in her own right, but, oh, you could not get her a Mother's Day gift that she couldn't make. That, you know, she was into making enamel earrings and pendants back in the 50s.
Oh, wow.
She did graduate into oils and watercolors, and she was so accomplished, she even took first place at the Minnesota State Fair.
Wow.
We didn't exhibit as much as she possibly could have. She was so creative that she, when we moved to Denver, she got into pottery and making pots out of the clay from the mountain.
Bridget, I got to ask before I let you go, do you make stuff yourself?
Oh, yeah. I do the crafting, but I've let the actual artistry with painting and watercolors and whatever to my sister Peggy. So just my other sister Mary is very artistry involved too.
That's great. Bridget, thank you so much for sharing that. So that it went from generation, one generation to another. She had a role model, but Eric, you are collecting role models for people with all the people you bring onto your show and into your book. Can you talk about finding whatever craft you get into, finding that mentor, either somebody in person or just somebody to be inspired by from afar?
Meaning, how do we find people for the show or for anybody?
For anybody, yeah, just to find that inspiration from someone, even if it's not your parents.
Yeah, I think now it's even easier for people because, you know, of the internet. You can go online, you can find people, and pretty much everybody's very approachable. I found that, you know, people that work with their hands, 9 times out of 10, they want to share that knowledge, you know, because most people understand that it's not really their knowledge to keep. You know, you're just a carrier, man. You have to make sure that you're teaching other people to keep that alive. And most people want to do that. So finding somebody to learn from is usually pretty easy.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Eric Gorges. He's the author of the new book, A Craftsman's Legacy, Why Working With Our Hands Gives Us Meaning. You might know him from the PBS show, A Craftsman's Legacy. Back to your calls now. Dana is with us in Wauwatosa. Dana, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Dana?
I hope you don't have another line ringing. I'm sorry. I figured it's just I'm in the car. I have been a craft junkie my entire life. I'm 54. My grandmother was really the inspiration, and she taught me how to knit. She taught me how to sew, and she did a lot of other things that I didn't do, needlepoint, made rugs and whatnot. And like you say, in my life, it's been so hard to find the time. I mean, I used to make socks and hats and sweaters. And, you know, and now I just take the time to do the simple projects, and because it's therapeutic, it's rewarding, and I'm much more focused and relaxed. If I have to sit in front of the computer and do expenses and sales reports, I'm just antsy, you know. And I just love it.
Dana, thank you so much. I want to jump in because we just have a couple minutes left. But Eric, she used the word, and you've used it, and you've got a whole chapter about it, focus, the idea that doing our craft brings us this focus that we might not have at other parts of our lives. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so many times when we're trying to do things, especially now, you know, we're multitasking, as they say, right? And then for a long time, that was a thing. Well, you know, are you able to multitask? And then we came around and you know, it came out that, well, that's not really productive, so you should really focus. Well, oftentimes when you're working with your hands, making something, you're forced to focus. You have to be in that environment right now, right there, and blow everything else out of your mind. And again, it's just therapeutic. It's healing. You know, it allows you to do that. It allows your mind to just really focus on one thing and concentrate on doing that one thing well.
Thank you so much for that call. We just have a minute or so left, Eric. Leave us with some inspiration again to maybe pick back up that craft. If people like Dana, we don't have that time anymore. Talk us into making that time.
You've got the time. You really do. Everybody has the time. It's just finding it, prioritizing it, making it worthwhile for you. And if you have kids, I highly encourage you to, you know, bring them in and do something with your kids. Make a project together. Make a birdhouse. Make whatever it is. Knit something. You know, paint something. And teach your kids and show your kids how to work with their hands. It's amazing.
We'll leave it there. Eric, thanks for joining us and have a good visit here in Wisconsin.
Thank you. I've got a flight out in a little bit, so
all
I look
right
forward to it.
fantastic. That's Eric Gorges. He's the host of A Craftsman's Legacy on PBS. You can check the schedule to watch him on Wisconsin Public Television. We've been talking about his new book. It's out today. It's called A Craftsman's Legacy, Why Working with Our Hands Gives Us Meaning. He's going to be at Milwaukee Makerspace for an event tomorrow evening hosted by Boswell Books. And hey, there's still time to share your story about crafting. I'm sorry we have a bunch of you still on the line right now, but we can take your emails. You can email ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Tell us about your crafts and we'll share at least some of your stories on the show in the next couple of days. Again, email ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. First, a new bipartisan bill in the state legislature would end so-called personal conviction waivers for parents who don't want vaccines for their children. The bill comes in part as a response to the national outbreak of measles. So far in 2019, there have been more than 760 reported cases of the illness nationwide, that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As of now, there have not been any reported cases of measles in Wisconsin, but the spread of a disease that was declared eradicated in 2000 by the CDC is raising alarm among public officials. Representative Gordon Hintz is the Assembly Minority Leader. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 54th Assembly District, which includes Oshkosh. He's the lead sponsor of the bill. Representative Hintz, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, glad to be here.
Well, can you talk a little bit more about why you wanted to tackle this issue now?
Well, we've introduced the bill in the past, and the reality is we have an obligation to do everything possible to keep the public safe. Wisconsin is out of the mainstream in terms of the majority in the states in the country do not allow for this personal exemption. And we've seen our rates are double what the national average is in terms of kids that are parents that are opting their children out of getting vaccinated. And it's heading in the wrong direction. And about 90% of these are utilizing the personal waiver to get out of these things. So when I met with public health professionals, they said the number one thing that we could do to protect the public, to enhance public health, is to eliminate this waiver to get the vaccination rates back up.
So talk about the different kinds of exemptions we have now where people can opt out of vaccines. A couple of them would stay, but then this personal one would go, right?
That's correct. So we right now in Wisconsin, you can have a medical waiver, obviously, if you've got direct health care issues related to, vaccines, you could opt out. We have a narrow religious waiver. Those would not go away. I mean, the big hole where we're seeing, increased rates of people opting out, again, 90% of are with a personal conviction waiver where no real answer or rationale has to be given. And that's where we're seeing our numbers really low. And while the statewide numbers are still relatively high, we have pockets of the state with extremely low numbers. And with an interconnected world, with travel and more interaction, we're at risk, even though we haven't been impacted yet. And I'm hoping we can avoid that by being proactive.
Now, you have at least some bipartisan co-sponsorship on this bill. What kind of support have you received from your colleagues on both sides of the aisle so far?
Well, we've got great public support. I think we have more than close to 30 co-sponsors. As you mentioned, it's bipartisan. This isn't a political issue. I get a lot more support privately, given that people are appreciative that we're being proactive on this. I think let's have a public hearing. Let's let the experts come in and remind us of how important vaccines have been both to public health and, we're largely victims of our own success. There are people out there that don't remember what it was like to have polio and chicken pox and measles and mumps, things that we've largely been able to eliminate because of that shared responsibility of making sure that, we're protecting those who don't have the choice.
You appeared on WISN's Upfront with Adrian Peterson this weekend with Republican State Representative Jeremy Thiesfeld of Fond du Lac. Representative Thiesfeld said he thinks this bill takes decision-making out of the hands of parents. Here's a listen.
This isn't a case where I don't believe that vaccination is a good idea. I do, and I would encourage parents that they should do that. But on the other hand, I'm not anti-vaccination, but I am pro-parental rights and responsibility. And one of the hallmarks of our medical society is informed consent and being able to control your own health care decisions.
Again, Representative Jeremy Thiesfeld of Fond du Lac there on WISN's Up Front. He's not alone in that opinion. Even people who are okay with vaccinations think this should be in the parents' hands. They should have this flexibility.
Well, I think they're ignoring a number of things. I mean, people that don't get vaccinated are only protected by those that do. And that's something that for people to understand. You don't get vaccinated just to protect yourself. You get vaccinated to protect those who can't. I'm expecting a new baby boy in a few weeks, and the idea that I won't be able to go to the Children's Museum or to the YMCA or to the public library because I'll be risking the fact that they can't get vaccinated until 15 months or older, I don't think it's fair to, you know, impact and reintroduce infectious diseases that have been gone for some time because people want that personal right. I mean, in our society, we also have a collective action, you know, together for the public good. And that's what we largely accomplished as society by doing what's right, what's science-based, to be able to protect the public health. It's about common sense. So, I mean, that argument might sound good on paper or in some chat room, but the reality is it doesn't hold up if your goal is to prevent, public health from suffering and even death. 110,000 people around the world died of measles in 2017. I take that seriously.
Talking to Representative Gordon Hintz, Assembly Minority Leader. He represents the Oshkosh area. Talking about a bill he's sponsoring that would end the personal conviction waiver for parents who don't want their kids to get vaccinations. As you mentioned, Representative Hintz, you've worked on legislation like this before. With measles in the news, do you feel like maybe your colleagues are going to be more likely to get on board here?
I do. I mean, what I've said to people is, look, we're going to increase vaccination rates, either by passing this bill or by having a measles outbreak, which parents that usually opted out run to the hospitals to protect their children. And so I'm hoping that we can be proactive rather than reactive. Clearly, I think there's some seriousness in terms of what we're seeing around the country with more than 700 cases in 2019 alone in 22 states. I think people are seeing, you know, what the negative consequences of this are. And so I think, we're hearing from all different groups, and certainly the medical professionals, the public health agencies are very active in demanding that it's time for us to act. We simply don't want to go backwards given the progress we've made. The reality is vaccinations were one of the greatest successes in science and public health, in our world's history. And we don't want to take steps backwards.
Now, what are you hearing from your constituents on this issue as you bring it forward?
Well, I mean, I can't tell you that there's nobody that's opposed. I'm not saying it's not even a complicated issue, but I think once you understand, again, and remind yourself, I mean, perhaps it was easier for people to understand when you had polio and measles and mumps and that, you know, that were, and the suffering was in front of you, and the recognition that if we all do this together, we can eliminate and protect people. It may have been easier to understand. Again, the people who do not get vaccinated are only protected by those who do. And it's been easy to get a lot of bad information out there, anti-science, anti-public health. But, I mean, talk to any professional health organization out there. Talk to anybody over 60 that remembers what it was like to be around when you had infectious diseases that wreaked havoc. And, again, globally, the majority of the 110,000 people that died of measles in 2017 were babies, were kids, were others who simply didn't have the protection. And if we're going to look out for those, we have an obligation to do everything possible to, you know, protect the public health and well-being of the citizens of our state, just like we do when we try to keep them safe, from crime and other things. It's one of the core obligations of state government.
As we wrap up, what is the timeline for this legislation?
Well, it's still open until Friday for people to sign on. And I think the goal after that is to hopefully have a public hearing, let some of the experts come and testify, get a good idea of what we have around the state, recognizing that there are pockets in the state that are really at risk. How effective it's been in some other states like California that have gotten rid of the personal exemption since they had an outbreak, and what the best practices are around the country. So let's get a public hearing, let's hear from folks, and let's move forward. And we have plenty of time to get that done this session, and it's the right thing to do, and I remain hopeful.
Representative Hintz, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
That's Representative Gordon Hintz, Assembly Minority Leader. He's a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 54th District, which includes Oshkosh. He joins us today to talk about a bill he's sponsoring that would end the personal conviction exemption for vaccinations here in the state. President Trump says he's ready to hit China with more tariffs as soon as this week. He's already imposed a 10% tariff on hundreds of billions of dollars in Chinese goods. Now he's threatening to raise that tariff to 25%. He's also considering new tariffs on other Chinese exports. Trump says the hikes are in response to China backtracking on previous commitments. Despite the bump in the road, another round of trade talks is scheduled between the two countries in Washington on Thursday, one day before these new tariffs could be announced. So what would these tariffs mean for U.S. consumers, especially here in Wisconsin, and for the prospects of a long-term trade deal? Avik Chakrabarty is an associate professor of economics at UW-Milwaukee. His areas of expertise include international trade and investment. Avik, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, how big a deal would these new tariffs be? Going from 10 to 25%, adding some new products, this is a lot of money potentially, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, if people in China, particularly the ones who are making the decisions, calling the shots, coming to the United States and cutting a deal, reneging on their previous deals, they should have known that this is coming. Had they realized that what President Trump says is what he essentially delivers, they would not have taken this risk of trying his patience. And I think, you know, at this point, the Thursday meeting is important, but the Chinese delegates, they need to convince ours here in the United States that what they were doing, essentially engaging in a trade war that's detrimental to their people more, is kind of senseless. So if they can move back from that, I think it's a win-win situation from both the countries. So I think it's a big deal, but if they stick to it, then I think China has more to lose than the United States.
And a lot of people with different opinions about the value of tariffs, a lot of people do seem to agree that China is in some ways a bad actor when it comes to international trade. Avik, can you tell us the kind of practices that have people worried when it comes to what China does on trade?
Right. You know, in addition to imposing unusually high tariffs on great customers like the United States, which is purchase so much of United States good, it has a very hidden strategy, which falls at the intersection of trade and finance, where we understand that basically they manipulate their currency's price, the exchange rate between the Chinese yuan and any other hard currency in this world. And the way they do it is by buying and selling their currency in a way that economists call sterilization. And that way they're able to keep their currency undervalued for a long, long time. And that makes U.S. customers feel at ease to buy their products. It's easy to get more of Chinese currency for every dollar. And therefore, we keep buying more and more of cheap, or if it's more politically correct, the cost-efficient Chinese products that also lack quality compared to goods that we manufacture in the United States and European nations. So China has taken many nations, particularly the United States, for a ride for a long, long time. And I think it took a leader like President Trump to come by and open our eyes, not just academics and economists, but also the eyes of working people, that if we stand behind him, if we show that we support his commitment to put America first, I think countries like China have no possibility of taking us for a ride in the future.
Now, one concern people have had about the tariffs that are already there and maybe higher tariffs is that this could hurt American consumers who buy the products made in China, and can hurt American manufacturers who maybe get raw materials or parts from China. Is there a significant economic price that we could pay here?
Only in the very, very short run, okay? So if China makes a mistake of taking President Trump less seriously, and they should take every tweet, everything that he's trying to signal to them before it gets too late for them. I think China is going to lose a huge market to other countries, particularly like India. You know, just like President Trump is trying to lead this country back to where it used to be in the world's view, there's another leader in India, Prime Minister Modi, who's highly capable, and he's leading the nation to a point where India could take away a lot of markets that China has been dominating in that area from Asia. And China has a lot to lose, not just in the short run, in the long run. whereas U.S. customers might feel a little brunt. I mean, they might feel a little pinch in prices, and the U.S. producers, manufacturers might see you know, China retaliating. But I doubt that, you know, given that the Chinese leadership understands that we have a president who is not only highly, highly educated, but also a successful business person, that they're going to win this against his wit and his experience. So I'm hoping that China would not kind of shoot itself in its foot. And if it does, then there are countries like particularly India, which can step in the medium run, in the long run, and become the next big trading partner with the United States without us having to worry about you know, China or any other country in the future trying to basically take their biggest customer for a ride.
Talking to Avik Chakrabarty, Associate Professor of Economics at UW-Milwaukee, looking at President Trump's threats to increase tariffs on China and to add new products to the list of products that have these tariffs imposed on them. This coming in a week where the U.S. and China, where trade negotiators are supposed to meet to work out a deal. Avik, what would a good trade deal between the U.S. and China look like? Spell out the outlines for us. I know it gets complicated in the finer points.
I think the best thing is completely free trade. Okay, so no hidden agenda, no reneging. China understands that its economy depends almost entirely on the United States having a trading partner in China, and United States consumers benefit, but China has to definitely come clean and try to understand that President Trump is trying to do the best for this nation, and it's also in the interest of China. Like, you know, every leader does it for their nation, they should. Every well-meaning leader, and President Trump is trying to do that for his people. The Chinese leadership should do the same for their people rather than having a hidden agenda somewhere in there where they're trying to renege on previous commitments or even cut quality to lower price or manipulate currency. They need to get rid of all these things. The best thing would be that just like, you know, the voters in the United States showed a great confidence in our president, the Chinese government should also understand that there are people behind President Trump who understand that he's trying his best to get this economy back on track, and the signs are showing. So I think the best deal is for China to basically commit to what President Trump is asking from them in a very well-meaning way. And the word threat has come up in the media many times. It's not a threat. It's more like a signal from President Trump saying that America comes first to him, not any other nation. And there's absolutely nothing wrong in any president or prime minister. Like I said, for Prime Minister Modi, India comes first. But, you know, the idea is if these countries can clear up their misgivings about the support that the leaders have from their people, I think they will be doing good for themselves, as well as the larger population that they have commanded votes from.
And Avik, I want to turn to a concern here in Wisconsin. We have farmers concerned, soy farmers in Wisconsin and neighboring states, for example, worried that, okay, in the future, maybe this comes out good, but there's been back and forth tariffs with China and other countries. They're facing retaliatory tariffs that are making it hard for them to stay in business while this all gets ironed out. What are your hopes for them?
See, I have one thing to tell people such as the Wisconsin farmers that, look, there's always a trade-off in any choice that we make, right? So there will be winners and losers. But as an economist, having studied economics for so many years, I can guarantee that President Trump has no intention to put the farmers any far back than they need to worry about right now. Basically, the idea is that the farmers or even some manufacturers who might lose a little bit in the short run, they would regain a lot with a more, you know, clarified, you know, no hidden agenda type of deal with a trading partner, be it China, be it India. They would gain a lot more in that trade in the long run. And by long run, I don't mean like that John Maynard Keynes once said, we are all dead in the long run. That's not the long run we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, roughly maybe 5 years, 6 years down the road, when we look back at this presidency and we proudly say that President Trump had done exactly what the United States needed for a long, long time. And of course, there were efforts like that by other presidents too. But I think President Trump has made it his priority that win or lose, he's going to do it right.
In our last minute or so, Avik, what is the next step you are watching for? What's the next signal you're watching for?
I think if the Thursday meeting goes well, then there will not be any further issues that either our consumers and farmers and manufacturers have to worry about or anybody else has to worry about. But if for some reason the Thursday talks don't go in favor of the United States, I think there will be action on the part of our government imposing more tariffs. They may give China a little more time, but that's the choice of our president and his advisors. But at the end of the day, I think whether it's this Thursday's talk or the time that our president allows China to reconsider if these talks fail, I think eventually what we need to watch for is the overall well-being of the population, and whether it's China or India. I think the United States will definitely find a trading partner in its current ones as well as future ones that will be beneficial for the people at large.
Avik, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Avik Chakrabarty is an associate professor of economics at UW-Milwaukee. We talked with him about President Trump's plan to raise tariffs on Chinese goods. Trump says he wants to increase tariffs from 10 to 25% on certain Chinese imports. He also wants to impose new tariffs on other goods. The hikes could go into effect as soon as Friday, but as we heard, there are negotiations going on Thursday that could impact that. You can let us know what you think about the president's trade policies. Email ideas@WPR.org, or you can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. What do you think about the president's threat to increase tariffs and what's going on with Wisconsin's agricultural exports? Here's a historical anniversary for you. This Friday marks the 150th anniversary of the Transcontinental Railroad. Two lines were built from east to west and west to east, and on this day in 1869, the Golden Spike was driven to connect the two lines and complete the route. As the Smithsonian Magazine reports, a trip cross-country to California went from 6 months down to 3.5 days. So how can you mark the historical occasion if you want to do that? One, you could visit one of Wisconsin's railway museums. There's a bunch around the state, including the National Railway Museum in Green Bay or the Mid-Continent Railway Museum in North Freedom. Looks like they open up for the season this weekend. Or you could sleep in a train car. Legally, that is. Don't just pick a random train car. It's just a bad idea. But the Smithsonian Magazine lists a number of hotels around the country. This is interesting. They're built out of old, reconditioned train cars. Now, they've got ones listed around the country, I think Tennessee, I think they had a California, but the one that's closest is in Two Harbors, Minnesota. It's on the shore of Lake Superior with 16 rooms in authentic, reconditioned boxcars. And it looks like they've souped them up pretty good because I picture like the empty boxcar with dust and you're laying on the floor. Nope, I think they've fancied them up just a bit. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.